Welcome to the Reason Podcast. I'm Zach Weissmuller. As political pundits who didn't see Donald Trump coming grapple with Hillary Clinton's loss in the presidential election, some have lashed out at third-party voters, whom they blame for costing Clinton victories in the key swing states of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. Putting aside the problems with this argument, the most obvious of which is that voters who picked Libertarian Gary Johnson or the Green Party's Jill Stein weren't guaranteed to unanimously break for Clinton had they been deprived of another choice, the spoiler effect is one that has always plagued third parties in America. Voters often feel compelled to choose the lesser of two evils, a phrase that's never been more apt than in this year when voters disliked both Clinton and Trump at record high levels. But what if a simple change to the way we vote allowed Americans to vote their conscience and choose the lesser of two evils? Our guest on today's episode argues just that. I'm joined by Dick Woodbury, the chair of the Committee for Rank Choice Voting. Rank choice voting, wherein you get to rank candidates from best to worst rather than voting for only one, just passed in the state of Maine by Voter Ballot Initiative, making it the first state to adopt this electoral reform. Woodbury served as an independent in the Maine House and Senate for 5 terms, during which he introduced ranked choice voting legislation, though it never actually passed during his tenure. By trade, he's an economist who works for the National Bureau of Economic Research, and he's been a visiting scholar with the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston and written extensively on tax reform in Maine. Dick, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Good to be with you.
Just so we're clear on the terms at the very beginning of the discussion, could you briefly tell us what ranked choice voting is and how it works?
Sure. When you have races that have more than two candidates, so you know, imagine an election that has 3, 4, or 5 candidates, there's a number of ways you can run those elections. Now, the traditional approach would be to just you vote for your favorite candidate, your one favorite candidate, and the candidate who has the most votes under that system wins. The issue is that somebody can win with far less than a majority of the vote. And in addition, there are inter-candidate dynamics where some candidates can get treated as spoilers because they seem to take away votes from another candidate. So there's all kinds of strategic voting that comes into play in these kind of races. What ranked choice voting does is really just like runoff elections. So, you know, you could imagine if you got 4 candidates, you could, you know, carry out the vote, you could eliminate the person that comes in last place, have 3 remaining, vote again, eliminate the person that comes in last place, have another runoff. And what ranked choice voting does is it enables you to have all the benefits of a runoff, but it's done instantly. And it works because instead of voters just voting for their single favorite candidate, they rank the candidates in the order of preference. Ranked choice voting is often called instant runoffs because it has these runoffs that happen instantly by eliminating the last place candidate in each round until one of the candidates has a majority of the votes.
I'm going to give this example, and you correct me if I'm wrong. I'm just going to use the most recent national election. And let's say there were 4 candidates, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, Gary Johnson, and Jill Stein. In the first round, the 4th place finisher would be eliminated. So let's say that's Jill Stein. The people who voted for Jill Stein, let's say half of their second choice was for Hillary Clinton, and half of them were for Gary Johnson. So half would go to Hillary, half would go to Gary. And then let's say the total vote count then has Johnson at the bottom. He's in 3rd place currently, so he's eliminated. A bunch of his votes go to Stein, but those are no longer relevant. So we skip over to the 4th, and then a bunch go to Trump, maybe 60%, maybe 30% go to Clinton, and 10% didn't have a 4th choice. And then after that's all sorted out, whoever between Trump and Clinton has the most votes then wins the electoral votes for that state. Is that more or less how it would work?
Yeah, that's just right. The key here is that, you know, for example, if you were a strong fan of Gary Johnson, for example, and you weren't particularly fond of either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. You could go ahead and vote for Gary Johnson under our current system, but there's a sense in which your vote might have been wasted if Gary Johnson really didn't have a plausible way to win the election. What this system allows you to do is vote for Gary Johnson, but if it turns out that Gary Johnson doesn't have a chance to actually win, then you get to participate in the final runoff between the two remaining candidates in your example, which would be Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. So it's a way for candidates with many more potential views, independents, libertarians, Green Party candidates, others, to be able to participate in the process, for voters to be able to actually consider them as potential candidates rather than as spoilers, in a sense. And so we believe it's a system that really is much better for democracy in that it still assures that the person who wins is getting the most votes, but it's somebody who is broadly appealing to the population as a whole, and you don't have candidates that are treated like spoilers.
I see. And just to point out in that example, if it was ranked choice voting all the way down in the primary process, you know, we might not even have, you know, a Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump running, but we can get into that question later. I want to, while we're kind of still focused on the mechanics of the system, bring up a criticism, which is critics often say that this makes the whole process, you know, less democratic and transparent, because adding this extra layer with all the runoffs and the shifting of votes around just muddles things even more and makes the outcome harder to verify. You know, we have some recounts going on right now, so there's already some distrust in the system. What's your response to that kind of objection?
Well, I think in a world where we have where multi-candidate races are much more common, and you know, here in Maine, we've had a Green Party that's existed for a while. You often run into these, you know, more complicated multi-candidate dynamics, where people really would like to have something that that has the benefits of a runoff. And there are certainly other states that have put in place actual runoffs. We believe, and we're obviously going to be doing this in Maine next year or in 2018. But we believe this is a really cost-efficient way to accomplish the same thing. And as a voter, when you're going into the polls and you have these multi-candidate races, there's a sense in which you really have more voice in the process when you're able to rank all of the candidates rather than just pick the single one that is your most preferred candidate.
Why is rank choice voting the reform that you sought? I've heard of other alternative voting systems. I've heard of things like, I think they call it rate voting, where you kind of rate candidates like you'd give an Amazon review, 0 to 5 stars, and then the best candidate wins. Why is this particular system the one that you've advocated for in Maine?
Well, we think it does the best job of figuring out the candidate that is of the greatest appeal to the largest number of voters. And I think what also makes it appealing is that we all understand already the idea of runoffs. You know, if you're in a situation where you have four candidates, you understand that the person who sort of has the fewest, you know, first choice rankings out of four, if you eliminate the one at the bottom and have a runoff, okay, well, I understand what a runoff is. If you then eliminate the bottom and you have a runoff between the top two, I understand what a runoff is. So rather than introducing something more radical, I guess, such as weighting candidates in different ways, we felt that this idea of runoffs, of a cost-efficient way to do runoffs, was really the best and the simplest, frankly, way to achieve the result of having somebody win who truly had the broad appeal, and without having these concerns about about candidates not even being listened to because they're considered not viable.
This is a system that's been tried in some other venues. My understanding is that this is what they do in the city of Portland and maybe in some corporate or nonprofit settings. Could you talk about the precedent? I mean, Maine is the first one to do it at a state level, but could you talk about some of the precedents for the system?
Sure. There's quite a number of municipalities that use it around the United States. And you know, frankly, some of them are as big as the state of Maine. So, you know, for example, San Francisco and Oakland, Minneapolis use it to elect their mayor and other positions. So it's been used in municipalities in the United States with very large populations similar to Maine. It's been used in other countries like Ireland and Australia. For nationwide elections. Interestingly, there's a couple of states in the South, and I've forgotten specifically, but they have actual runoffs, but they send ranked ballots to their overseas military so that they're able to participate in the runoff, because there wouldn't be time to kind of send the runoff ballots out and have them come back in time. So even in situations where there are statewide elections, as in these southern states, it's been tested as an approach that makes sense to allow people to participate cost efficiently and time efficiently in a runoff.
What kind of outcomes have we seen in these situations, both in terms of the kinds of candidates that that ranked choice voting results in, and also, I guess, voter satisfaction? Has there been any study of those questions?
I'm glad you asked. 90% of the time, the person who has the most first choice rankings is also the candidate who ultimately wins. So it's only 10% of the time that that candidate really doesn't have sufficient broad appeal that they won't get a majority in the end. But the big positive effect, and this is just particularly applicable, I think, today with just the unbelievable negativity that we're seeing in politics, is the approach that candidates take to campaigning is much more civil. And the reason is that if I, as a candidate, have spent my whole campaign criticizing some other candidate, and that candidate ends up being eliminated in the narrowing down of the candidates through the rounds of the ranked choice voting process, then people who liked that candidate who's eliminated, if I've spent my whole campaign saying how terrible they are, they're unlikely to think I'm a person that they'd want to put as their second choice.
Right.
But if, you know, if I really want to attract their votes, I'm going to be much more civil to that person. And I think, you know, possibly even say, well, you know, they've got some good ideas. I think I'd be better. I've got the right experience. I think I've got, you know, more comprehensive vision for what our state or our country needs. But the whole thing, I think, will at least temper the degree of negativity that you see in, you know, particularly in high profile races these days.
That's very interesting. Is it plausible that somebody who came in, let's say, third place in the initial round could actually win when all is said and done? And is that a good or a bad thing?
It would be extraordinarily rare for, and it certainly couldn't happen in the case of if there were only three candidates. If you're the candidate with the third most first choice rankings, you're the one that's eliminated. So the runoff is between the first and the second. In a rare case, you could have a circumstance where, say, fourth and fifth candidate, you know, ranked candidates are eliminated. All of them like the number three candidate. So the number three candidate passes the number two candidate, and the final runoff is between one and three.
Right.
And plausibly three could win. And again, it's a case where, that would be a case where this is sort of a consensus candidate. All of the people who kind of liked the third, fourth, and fifth thought that was the best sort of type of candidate to win, so that ultimately when you got to a head-to-head race between that candidate and somebody else, they were the one that was appealing to the largest number. It's rare that would happen with a third ranked candidate, but
Yeah, but it sounds like that would be kind of the compromise candidate and somebody that, you know, at least people kind of have some skin in the game and they're like, yeah, I put that person down for my second or third choice. So it's not a terrible outcome. So this just passed in Maine by a direct vote on a ballot initiative by about 30,000 votes, 52% voting yes and 48% voting no. And it makes Maine the first to try this on a statewide basis. So it's a big deal. It's an experiment that the whole country should be paying attention to, I think. Was the outcome what you expected? Was it a closer or wider margin than you thought it would be?
Well, you obviously hope to win by as much as you can.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've got to say the whole process has been really inspirational, starting from, you know, when we began collecting signatures to put this on the ballot and even before, really. Maine's had a long history of these multi-candidate races. And just as an illustration of that, 9 of our last 11 governor's races have been won by less than a majority of the vote. 5 of them have been won by less than 40% of the vote, 5 of the 11. So we're kind of familiar with these vote splitting dynamics in Maine. And what was, you know, particularly obvious when we began collecting signatures for this initiative in the 2014 race, it was a 3-person race between a Democrat, a Republican, and an independent, all of whom were reasonably strong candidates. Hmm. But the, you know, in this case, the independent was treated entirely as a spoiler, where, you know, the very overtly throughout the campaign, the message was, you can't vote for this person because they can't win, so don't waste your vote. And we weren't talking about the issues, you know, people's vision for the economy or their vision for education policy. All we were talking about was spoiler effects and polling and was this person viable or not viable? And, you know, did you need to do a strategic vote? That was the conversation rather than the experience and the capabilities and the ideas of the candidates. I mean, I'm not saying there was none of that, but it was really overshadowed by this strategic stuff. When all our volunteers went out to the polls to begin collecting signatures, there was just a sense of gratitude that thank goodness you're doing this to improve Maine's election system. The list of public figures and civic leaders and business leaders and faith leaders from around the state that signed on to this and endorsed this, it spanned the entire political spectrum in a way that's really rare for referendum politics, which tend to come, you know, from more extreme groups.
You have a rather controversial governor in Maine, Paul LePage, who was both times elected by a plurality and not a majority of the voters. How much of a motivating factor do you think that was in getting this passed in Maine?
I think a fair bit of the initial energy of people, wanting to get involved at the outset, probably many of them were motivated by that. But the, you know, once you sort of talk about the fact and the realization of the fact that, you know, we've had minority winners who are Republicans, we've had minority winners who are Democrats, we have had minority winners who are independents. You know, this is not about one race or one person. It's about improving the process to better handle a election landscape where it's not just a Democrat and Republican who are running anymore. There tend to be more candidates. And our current system just doesn't work as well when there are more than two candidates running. So I think the awareness of how this would improve the process, you know, wasn't just about the people who didn't like this governor. It was about realizing that we needed a system that better addressed, you know, whatever the multi-candidate dynamics might be in a particular election.
Speaking of, you know, multi-party politics, both Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party presidential candidate this year, and Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, have been very vocal and enthusiastic about this being a reform that could help break up the two-party duopoly and open up more opportunities for third-party candidates. Do you think that enthusiasm is well-placed?
Well, in a way, I think we're already there with having greater diversity of candidates that are participating in elective politics. So, as a result, you do have Jill Stein's out there and you have Gary Johnson's out there. And we just need an election system that that enables them to participate fairly. And I think this does it. You know, I still think in typical races where you have many candidates, it's still going to be the Democrat and the Republican who emerge as the top two. But what's different is going to be that, let's go back to this presidential race. I suspect there are very few Americans that have a good sense of what the platforms were for Jill Stein or Gary Johnson. And that's because they never got a chance to be considered viable, right? So, I don't need to figure out what they're going to do because they can't win. So I don't need to figure it out. In a ranked choice system, you can go ahead and figure out what it is they stand for, what their experience is, what their platform looks like, what you think of them, and you can rank them. You can vote for them without any possibility that your vote has been wasted. So even though they may or may not end up being viable in a final election, in the final tabulation, at least people are able to look at their ideas and their platforms and their experience and evaluate it and make a decision and put them in the rankings. And, I just got to believe that that's a better way for democracy to happen.
When you dig into the numbers of this latest presidential election, you find out that about half of registered voters actually didn't vote for either Trump or Clinton. About 24% voted for Trump, about 25% or so went for Hillary, and then the rest went for third parties, write-ins, or just didn't vote at all. My takeaway from this has kind of been like a lot of people just didn't want to vote for either of these people. They had record unfavorable ratings, both of them. Do you think that ranked choice voting would do anything to help alleviate this kind of situation on the national scale in these high-profile races?
Well, I do think it's a good example of, why this is an improvement. I mean, it's certainly true that both of the major party candidates had unprecedentedly high negative approval ratings. You can go all the way back to the primary process, and I mean, particularly thinking about the Republican primary. Mm-hmm. That began with whatever, 16 or 19 candidates. And in order to win a state race when there are 16 or 19 candidates, you really don't need very much percentage of the vote.
Right.
Whereas if you'd had a system that narrowed down the candidates with the least ranked and the next least ranked and the next least ranked and so on, getting eliminated until you sort of have somebody who truly becomes acceptable to a true majority of the electorate, that could have played out really differently than how it did.
You served in the state legislature in Maine, and you tried to get this reform passed through the legislative process, and it didn't work out. And the way it ultimately got through was taking it to the voters. Why do you think that is? And do you think that's going to be the case for other states?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think part of why it didn't succeed in the legislature during the period that I was introducing it is it was a newer idea that really needed some time to incubate. I don't know, it might have been 10 years ago that it was first introduced. It wasn't me, but somebody introduced it in the Maine legislature. And I think, as with many new ideas, you need a little time to sort of both figure out how it's going to work in practice, understand it, get comfortable with it, those kinds of things. So part of it is just that it's an idea whose time finally came in Maine after, yet another heavily contested, huge amounts of negative advertising kind of election, particularly with the spoiler effect so obvious. So a piece of it is that its time had come. But, I suppose there's a degree that there are, I'm going to use the term party operatives, but I don't quite know what I mean. But people who've succeeded in navigating at least the current system. Mm-hmm. It's using the negative advertising. It's using the strategic aspects of campaigns. So I think there's a group of, you know, professional, political, operative type people that have so succeeded and profited both in sort of power and finances too, probably, with the current system, that there's a resistance among some who are in that situation. But in terms of the regular people who are serving in, for example, the Maine legislature, they get why this matters. So, you know, it might ultimately have succeeded in the legislature at some point in the future too. But given that it's a pro-democracy reform, I'm kind of glad it's the people that did it.
Yeah, and it's amazing that it has broken through and kind of routed around those entrenched interests that you were alluding to. When are we going to first get to see this in action in Maine?
It takes effect with the 2018 elections, so it will first be used, you know, unless there's some special election earlier in 2018. It'll first be used in our June primaries, our June 2018 primaries. And it applies to, we'll have a governor's race that year. And I'm expecting our governor's race, because it's an open seat. Our current governor is term limited from running again. So we've got an open seat that I suspect will have a large list of Democratic candidates, a large list of Republican candidates, probably a Green candidate, probably a Libertarian candidate, and probably a handful of independents. So it's going to be it's going to be the kind of race where this type of reform is ideally structured to handle.
Wow, it's going to be fascinating to watch that. Do you have any allies elsewhere or know about this reform being pushed anywhere else? Are there any other states that we should be on the lookout for where we might expect to see this soon?
Well, I know Minnesota has done a fair bit of looking at how they wanted to, they already use it in Minneapolis and St. Paul, you know, so I think there's an active group there that's interested in expanding it into statewide elections. There is a national organization that's been advocating for this kind of reform called Fair Vote. But I do have to say, it's been really gratifying to read so much of the national press that says, hey, look at what Maine's doing. We ought to be exploring that, you know, where we have elections, too. So I think the eyes are on us. I'm looking forward to seeing it in action for our 2018 elections.
We'll all be watching. I'm excited to see how it all turns out. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us and explain what's going on with ranked choice voting.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Zach Weissmuller for The Reason Podcast. Please rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe for regular episodes. Thanks. We'll see you next time.